Lettuce.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beep Beep Lettuce, the show about weed, memes, and also communism.
Once again, we're here smoking weed for you to tell you how communist the weed is.
That's right. And we've got Bryn, John, and Chris today. And, you know, lots of news to talk about. First of all, let's talk about across the pond.
Oh, yeah. We have some fantastic news in. Nigel Farage made a gaffe, made a fucky wucky yeah. and oopsie whoopsie.
He did an oingo boingo.
He got pranked hard.
He got tricked, you might say.
Yeah, he got trolled. Apparently he's on Cameo, because when you're the leader of a political party that only existed for a few years, Cameo is one of the only options that you have left. And apparently, so somebody asked him to give a happy birthday shout out to a fictional person named Hugh Janus.
One of my very favorite ones, because I think, because a lot of the times with those sort of Simpsons, Bart Simpson style names, mm-hmm. you can kind of just look at it and know what it's trying to say. Mm-hmm. But I've always had a real problem looking at Hugh Jass or Hugh Janus mm-hmm. and not seeing like a real name.
Yeah, if you have like Amanda Hug and Kiss, I mean, come on. Yeah, you can see through that.
But Hugh and Janus are both real names.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
You know? They're all too real.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, and Janus is just believable enough because it's the last name. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yes.
You're like, oh, is that Polish? Like
mm-hmm. That one and Mike Hunt.
Mike Hunt. Well,
Mike Hunt is a tough one, yeah.
I mean, my fiance knew a guy whose name was Michael Hunt, and he had to go by Michael all the time. Yeah.
Mike Hunt?
It's Michael.
Is Mike Hunt here? you can't even say it.
I mean, it's so funny to see somebody who was like a major figure in politics for a while get reduced to like Mo Sizlak from The Simpsons, though.
pretty right. fucking so good. If you don't know, Nigel Farage was the leader of UKIP, the sort of like, I guess, UK's sort of far right, almost to the point of like not even the Republicans, but further than that, like the sort of meme Nazi party, like right. Sargon of Akkad was involved with that, I think.
Yeah, he's just an ideologue too. Like, he's never won a seat in parliament. Like, he's never been
really
in power. No, he's just been influential, you know.
Right. And, like, he's sort campaigns. Of who do we have here that's sort of like Nigel Farage?
I'm trying to think, because it's like I feel like
Shapiro or
like wanting to leave the EU is like sort of letting like weird fantasies about how like global politics works like infect your worldview. I don't really know who we have that like,
yeah,
because I feel like we basically just have like nativists.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who we have? We have a fucking the Proud Boys guy, the guy who ran Vice.
Gavin McInnes.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. This is like when Gavin McInnes started.
It has
a political
been so
party.
Many years since that's been relevant name to my brain. It just completely fell out. But yeah, I think
was gonna
he's,
say he's like what Paul Joseph Watson would grow up into right. if he were British, but then I looked mm-hmm. it up and Paul Joseph Watson is British.
He
just has American politics brainworms.
But he also, I think, is involved in UKIP. But
is he? Oh, okay.
I keep wanting to say Garth Ennis, the Proud Boys guy. He's
Gavin
sort of like
douchebag. Yeah.
A leader of a something like a group or a party, but. And, you know, has a big platform, I guess. People listen to him, even though I can't even remember his name.
He's probably on Cameo currently talking about Hugh Janus.
Absolutely.
Hugh Janus.
So Nigel Farage did a Cameo to celebrate someone named Hugh Janus.
Oh, yeah.
And
I gotta
he just
say,
comes right out of the gate, too. Like, the first 3 seconds of the video are just, happy birthday, Hugh Janus.
I hear you're a huge fan, I think he says.
Yeah, I hear you're an enormous fan.
Yeah, I read the headline and like was going through the article and was like, oh, that's funny. And then I watched the video and I still laughed out loud. You know it's a great prank when like knowing what's coming doesn't make it less funny.
Happy birthday, Hugh Janus. I've heard you're a massive fan of Chez Wheely and her battle against Cal the Dragon. How could I help to make sure Chez Wheely wins the war against Cal and his garden gnome army? And this is from the lads, lads, lads. Happy birthday.
Yeah, but it's a great time. Not really news at all, but it's just, a new fun thing that we just realized you could do is that if someone who is a huge asshole is on Cameo, you can make them say anything.
Mm. Yeah. For like, I don't know, how much do you think you have to pay for Nigel Farage's Cameo? Like,
I'm going to guess 50 pounds. 50
yeah.
bucks.
I was going to go for 50. Yeah. 20 seems like he'd be like, I shan't do it for 20. None. That's peasant wages.
Yeah. But I think a nice, because he's probably not rolling in dough.
It's $100. I looked at it. Wow. He wants $100 for a 12-second video?
It was funny enough for me to talk about it on this show, so I think that's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, worth that particular $100. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Well, speaking, we wanted to butter you up with something funny and fun, because now we need to talk about something incredibly serious. There is a new head of state in Cuba, or rather, since I'm not 100% clear on how Cuban politics works exactly, Raul Castro is stepping down, and it looks like he's going to be replaced by somebody named Miguel Diaz-Canel, who apparently has been very active in the party and has been well-respected and kind of groomed for this position for a long time.
Right. So this news came out, I think, the week before last, mm-hmm. that Castro was stepping down, mm-hmm. which, you know, a lot of people were very nervous about that, because today, I think, Blowback Season 2 came out, which is Noah Colwyn and Brendan James' show about different histories, but they're doing a whole thing about the history of the Cuban Revolution and how much America wants it fucking dead, they are one of the few countries that has been able to sort of retain what most people can't even do, the like China bad thing to Cuba. Like, you must recognize that they are doing a lot of communist stuff.
I've ever seen somebody who has like weird anti-tanky brain being like, Cuba has concentration camps or Cuba has slave labor.
Right.
They basically recognize
only
that
really
it's good.
Recently has there been, it feels like, a new push to be like, Castro and Che were mass murderers, mm-hmm. or, you know, some insane fucking lie.
I think that's like mainly a Gusano thing. It's like rich white people in
right. But
in
I think,
Florida.
You know, there was that show, that like One Day at a Time show, mm-hmm. that had like the anti-Che propaganda.
Yeah.
There's been some stuff in the media generally sort of like trying to remind people that no, Cuba is bad, mm-hmm. even though their handling of the COVID-19 crisis and, you know, their obvious amazing healthcare and their housing market, you know, mm-hmm. like lots of really good things, clearly raising millions of people out of poverty and, you know, educating a lot of people, millions of people. It's hard to even for, you know, online sock dems or whoever to be like, Cuba bad. Like, it's clearly good. And so I think a lot of people are nervous about Castro stepping down, because it's easy to be like, well, you know, American regime change plot in 3-2-1, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, there's this Telesur English article attached to the main one that we're reading that's talking about them holding the 8th Congress of the Cuban Communist Party, which is apparently the first one that will not be held without Castro himself present.
Mm. Yeah,
And he's still written a letter to the party giving his input and stuff. But that Congress that they're holding took place from the 16th to the 19th. So that Congress, I guess, is what elected Diaz-Canel. And then also within that Congress, I imagine they're making a lot of decisions like to affect their charter or their constitution or whatever they use going forward to make decisions with. So unfortunately, we are recording this on the last day of their Congress. And so a lot more news about this will be forthcoming, hopefully in the next week or so, the next few days.
Right. And New York Times has an article from 2018 when he first became the president, which is a step lower in the Cuban political system, that says, who is Miguel Diaz-Canel, Cuba's new president? And they talk about him as, like the first paragraph is, as soon as Cuba and the Obama administration decided to restore diplomatic relations, decades of bitter stagnation began to give way. Embassies were being reopened. Americans streamed to the island. The curtain was suddenly pulled back from Cuba, a nation frozen out by the Cold War. So, you know, obviously a bit of ideology in that paragraph. But one mystery remained. While everyone knew of Cuba's president, Raul Castro, his handpicked successor, Diaz-Canel Bermudez, was virtually unknown.
unknown by who?
Yeah.
Also, yeah, this is like such a classic thing they do in communist countries where it's like, Joe Biden was Obama's vice president, and now he's the president. Does that mean he's Obama's handpicked successor?
That's right.
And
right.
Now the continuation of the Obama regime, or is it just a guy that he liked and that everyone wanted to vote for?
Right.
Right. Well, and they're also just like casually referring to him as the president of Cuba. And I looked up how it works. And technically, he's the first secretary of the Communist Party, the president of the Council of State, and the president of the Council of Ministers. But he's not president of Cuba. There are other leadership positions that are still filled by other people. Like Esteban Lazo Hernandez is president of the National Assembly of People's Power. So it's they want us to think that it's like a completely unitary dictatorial system. And it's not that. There is a little bit of diffusion of power.
A lot of, I mean, the whole point is that they're fucking communists. Right. So it's like everything is diffuse. Everything is, you know, and this is the big game they try and play, right? Which is that, you know, America is super complex and very democratic, where everyone else is literally just one family choosing their successors and it's royalty or something.
Which is like, so funny, because that's what Cuba was before the revolution.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think it's also a strong amount of projection, where it's like the US has like a strongly like handed off to their successor, extremely powerful unitary executive.
It's been the same three families for fucking for 30 years, all of whom are associated with the CIA, and they all hang out together.
Yeah, they all go to Epstein's Island together and plot who the next president will be.
They threw us Barack Obama as like a fucking curveball. They like let it happen. And then as soon as he was established as a presidential figure, they were like, his vice president, next one up. He's the surefire pick. Like, if there's not a dynasty in place, the United States will just fabricate one, because we don't care. Like, it's just whatever's on the label.
Right. So, but I guess the point of all of this is to say that this appears to be assuaging a little of my fears that there's going to be some sort of Bolivian type coup, where it's like, oh, there's going to be an election. I mean, we don't know. We haven't seen, it's not till tomorrow probably that we'll start seeing any like American news about this, but like, we very well could see like the people are crying out for justice because the elections were, you know, rigged or whatever. Like, right, this is, but I don't know.
I think it's less likely in Cuba than it is in the like South American socialist states in particular, for two reasons. One, because Cuba is not socialist. They're not, well, I mean, they are socialist, but they're not like socialist. Not communist, you know what I mean? They're not pink. They're not like a fancy social democrat country. They are a communist country working their way in one way or another towards communism. That's a huge advantage. And then two, they don't share any land borders with anybody, much less any CIA-controlled states. I mean, we're the great Satan in their backyard, but we're kind of far enough away for it to not be a huge deal now that like the nuclear crisis is over.
Right. They don't pose a significant threat to our anything. It's more like an ideological, like manifest destiny thing that we wish we could have that island, because it annoys us that, but like, they don't even have like a huge export that we really need right now. You know, like,
well, we already saw that one guy tweet, that absolute fucking insane brain person, who was just like, the people of Cuba will now revolt democratically and hold, you know, verified free and fair elections. And then Cuba applies for statehood and becomes the 51st state.
Shut the fuck like, up.
Oh, fuck you. Yeah. How about we let all the other islands go instead? You know?
Yeah.
Put Hawaii back, put Puerto Rico back, etc.
Can you imagine like a more unappealing prospect than being like, I want to join the United States, and now I'm under the purview of the FBI and the CIA and the laws of Congress and the fucking US Senate?
Why would they want, like, what kind of dumbass history do you think you know? Like, it's astounding that anyone could say something so fucking stupid. But yeah, so that's what is going on right now. So it appears to me that there's sort of it's not even a transfer of power. We're looking at a direct lineage of someone who's been working with the Communist Party since Fidel was still alive. And he's just sort of like, this is someone everybody wants. This is how their system works. Nothing too bad is going to get shaken up, hopefully. But we will see on the next episode of PP Bledis.
Well, speaking of shaking things up, we're going to take the the quick jump across the pond from Cuba to Florida. Where there is a McDonald's owned by a franchisee who owns 60 McDonald's across Florida, Blake Casper, who one of his supervisors or his general manager or whatever was telling him how hard it is to get people to come in for an application. And so his manager's idea was that we should just give $50 to anybody who comes in for an interview. And guess what? People still don't want to work at McDonald's. And it's so confusing to these people. They're like, why aren't people wasting an entire day coming in for an interview for $50?
Honestly, $50 isn't even a fucking... like, that's not a day's work.
Maybe it's an eighth. It's like, would you go all the way to McDonald's just to have an eighth? I don't know if I would.
Yeah. I go to McDonald's after I've had the money for an eighth. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. Like,
that's when I'm making my Mickey D's trip. Mm-hmm. But he also said it hasn't been this difficult to hire workers since the late 90s. Were
what
we just doing so economically
90s?
Well in the late 90s that nobody wanted a fast food job? until Osama hit us with those damn planes, we were doing so good.
Everything was good.
I couldn't even hire a damn burger flipper.
Yeah, it's really funny that they're like, he's considering raising the starting wages from $12, which is $3 above Florida's minimum wage, to $13.
Oh my God.
So he's like, look, I've got a crazy plan that maybe could work. It's called $1. It's called, ever heard of a guy called George Washington?
Yeah. My friend George Washington has something to say to you.
But it is funny because, like, I remember, like, being a kid in the 90s and, like, sort of noticing that in my hometown, that just, like, driving around, I would see a ton of, like, restaurants and, like, stores and strip malls and stuff that said, like, hiring. And I think I asked my dad or something. I was like, why are so many places hiring? And he was like, well, the economy is doing more well, so that means that there's less people who don't have a job. And it's, like, very funny because it's, like, that's kind of how you think about it before, if you have like liberal brain, and then you read something like this and you're like, oh, they're very unwilling to pay even a dollar more an hour, and they'd rather just right. like gut it out until there's enough desperate people who want to work for $12 an hour.
Right.
Because once you start raising the wages, it's like, where do you stop?
What and if people are like...
Yeah, exactly. And instead of raising the wages, just handing out $50 for a fucking interview, it's like, sure, mm-hmm. you might hand out $500 or $1,000 to interviewees over the course of a few weeks or months, but then now you don't have to pay the one that you hire mm-hmm. that $1,000. You will make that back in a fucking few months. Like,
A day. Yeah. Like, I mean, just to be clear, that is... $27,000 a year. That's under $30,000 a year if you work every single day, 40 hours right. a week, which you probably won't because it's probably part-time and there's probably no benefits at all. So it's probably more like $20,000 a year before taxes. This is poverty wages. Like, that's nothing. It's fucking, like, I don't know what the fucking rent is like in Florida, but goddamn, like, what are we talking about?
It's
like, that's
terrible.
not a job.
I'm talking about borrowing some clothes and realistic face masks and going in there pretending to be a different person 9 times a day and just making bank off this guy. That's what I'm talking about.
Digging deep into your closet and you're like, Dracula cape and fangs, and you go in and you're like, I found a job at McDonald's. I can only work nights. Is that okay?
Needed. Just putting out a Craigslist ad, like, needed incredibly good makeup artist. If you have the skills and I have the conviction, we will both get paid.
Mm-hmm. I will pay you $25 for each new face you can make me.
Split it 50-50. We're going to take this all the way to the fucking
only
blood
fair.
Bank.
Yeah.
Now, that's a meritocracy right there.
No, that's an honest
can you scam
living.
A McDonald's? Yeah, that's right.
It turns into, you know, those memes where it's like two different windows and one has no one lined up and the other has like 1,000 guys lined up, and it's like the empty one says working at McDonald's and the full one says getting $50 for interviewing at McDonald's.
Dressing up as Dracula. Yeah. I mean, this is just despicable and absurd. Like, fucking pay people and maybe you can, like, how much money would you really lose?
Right.
Like,
you
this
own
guy
60
has
McDonald's?
60 McDonald's. Like, the people who have a couple franchises or just one are already fucking evil shits. I mean, if you ever worked at a fast food place or any sort of food service like this, chain food service, it's one of the hardest and worst jobs I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I worked this kind of job, food service, for, I don't know, probably 5-6 years out of my life. And it's fucking awful.
It's insane that, like, flipping burgers is supposed to be a phrase that evokes, like, something that a dumbass can do or something that's easy or whatever. And it's like, I'd much rather like type at a keyboard or fucking talk into a microphone than flip a burger. Flipping a burger is kind of hard. You have to flip them all day. What if they burn?
I think instead of burger flipper, we should like derisively refer to people as like pundits. Mm-hmm. You know, you fucking editorialist, you fucking editorial board motherfucker.
Yeah, it's like you fucking opinion columnist. I hope my kid is smart enough to flip burgers and they don't end up having to write opinion columns.
You fucking open office douchebag.
Yeah.
It's like literal like fucking Guantanamo Bay style torture sometimes. It's like you're literally not allowed to sit. Like, mm-hmm. What kind of fucking insane shit is that? Mm-hmm. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. And paying people slave wages for slave labor is disgusting, and this guy should be strung up as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of what you were saying about like the fact that he owns 60 franchises. Like, that's probably why he's so loath to even raise it a single dollar, because it's like if you own 60 McDonald's and you raise the pay at even one of them, then it's like all the other ones are kind of going to expect another dollar an hour, and then you're just like 60 McDonald's, 8 hours a day for each employee. One, like, you're just like imagining all this money,
right? But it's highway robbery. I mean,
right? That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it's like there's people are so greedy in America that like nothing is ever enough. You know, it's like he's probably making millions of dollars a year in profits just for owning McDonald's, but every time like money has to leave, he's always like, ooh, but I could have had that money. I could have had even more money.
Right. Well, speaking of doing absolutely insanely evil shit, Minnesota has called in the National Guard to accompany medical emergency and fire responders to treat patients safely. What's going on here?
So apparently the big thing that's happening in the Twin Cities area right now is something called Operation Safety Net, which as a part of which they're bringing in the National Guard to basically walk around with medics and firefighters and defend them. I'm doing huge air quotes here from the big scary protesters. And really it's cool. It's an uncontroversial way on the surface to bring a lot more firepower and, you know, trained killers who work for the government into the Twin Cities area to intimidate and possibly, you know, take up violence against the protesters, because the protesters have been going hard, and props to them. They have been, you know, doing an incredible job. But this Operation Safety Net thing is very, very strange to me. And they even have like a little website with a little like community watch thing and a little Twitter feed over in the corner. And they're mobilizing every fucking organization from the Minnesota State Patrol to the National Guard to local police. And it says that it's a joint effort among the Minneapolis Police Department, Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, the state of Minnesota, and local jurisdictions. So it's basically like an all hands on deck order for everybody who works in law enforcement in the greater Twin Cities area or the state of Minnesota. And mm-hmm. It's disgusting. They're basically mobilizing the modern day SS against protesters who have utterly legitimate, you know, grievances with the way that the state has handled things.
Just to be clear, we're talking about the state that killed George Floyd and then, while his trial was going on, killed a 13-year-old child.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, for a second I had a very naive and incorrect thought, but because I read that it was like they want to provide security for first responders, enabling them to safely treat patients. And I was like, oh yeah, I saw someone saying that the cops were targeting medics and stuff. And I was like, maybe the National Guard are going to let them treat protesters and not arrest them. But then it was like, oh no, why would they do that? Of course they're going to be working.
Yeah, that's definitely not what they're doing.
Hand in glove with the cops.
If you want to be a medic at a protest, you have to have like a big fucking ambulance that says EMT on the side. And like, you know, you have to be in good with the hospitals and stuff. Because the fucking EMTs, like, I hate to say this because for like firefighters and EMTs and paramedics, all kinds of first responders besides cops provide a totally useful and unequivocally good service that is needed by the public, but they hang out with cops. Mm-hmm. They all do. I've worked at coffee shops and I've seen this happen. I work in front of a hospital and I see this happen, you know, 24 hours a day. There are cops hanging around, talking to EMTs, talking to firefighters, talking to security guards, because they don't have anything to fucking do. And so there's definitely a class consciousness that says like, we're all on the same side. You know, we keep society running, and like, it's true, the EMTs and firefighters keep society running, but then there's this perverse inclusion of the police that you know, by virtue of giving them this thing to hold on to, turns them all into fucking, you know, lapdogs of the state, of the bourgeois, just like the fucking police are.
Right.
And so this is, it's like incredibly upsetting to see them used as a way to like Trojan horse, or like, you know, just kind of like sneak
yeah,
in.
Soften the sort of look on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, what's so like, it's a very, very insidious phrase, first responder, because it's like, if your house is burning down or you're having a heart attack, or your neighbor is playing his rap music too loud, all of those are treated as an equal emergency by the state. they're sending a firefighter or an EMT or a guy with a gun to solve the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, sorry, I said a 13-year-old child, meaning Adam Toledo, but that happened in Chicago. Dante Wright was the person who was killed, who was about, I think, 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In Minnesota. Sorry to confuse. There's so many fucking police shootings of black people.
Yeah, what's more fucking American than getting mixed up about which extrajudicial murder you were talking about?
Right, exactly. And that guy didn't even have a gun. Ever.
He had a right. car, yeah.
He had a car.
And I think like a warrant for smoking weed before.
Yeah. From what I can tell, he was like on his way to the courthouse to like pay a fine for something, and that when they stopped him, which is why he was trying to run away, because he was like, well, if they take me to jail now on the way to pay the fine, like they're gonna double that onto my misdemeanor or whatever.
Oh,
and then it's gonna be like worse.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was like, I'm just gonna run to the courthouse and then pay it.
God.
Yeah, because it was like, we live in a draconian evil system.
Yeah, I think what I read is that he smoked weed at some point and like pled guilty and had to pay like a fine, and then because of COVID like wasn't able to pay it, so it like went to collections. So it's like he owed the state a bill, basically, was his crime.
You should never be in debt to the state for weed, period, for any drug, really. Like, you should never owe the fucking state money for that, because that shit does escalate to violence. Mm-hmm. And you know, always at the hands of the cops. And then on top of all of this, this whole Operation Safety Net thing is just taunting us. It's just the cops like fucking taunting us as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because they're holding press conferences where they're talking about like confiscated weapons and like military gear. And then you look at the photo, like I have this tweet here from It's Going Down, and it's like a wooden shield with a red star painted on it and an all power to the people or something sign. And then like a few cans of paint, a couple oil, like plastic bottles of oil, and a rack of cans of beans.
Is this like a tube of wrapping
beans?
Paper? What is this like long tube or like stick that's all colorful? Is it like a stick that's painted or something? I don't know what I'm looking at.
I don't know. It might be an umbrella or like a wand or a baton of some kind. And they're putting this shit on the tape. I mean, like, it really has the exact same energy as that meme that went around for a while of the four cops standing around the table with their, you know, I had to do it to them.
Yeah.
Like one bag of weed.
They're not even standing over like a bag of weed and a knife. They're standing over things that you can buy at Home Depot and CVS.
that's a weapon.
Yeah, nothing here is even sharp unless you like got a splinter from this sign or something.
I mean, this is like the same thing that my fucking, when I was like a weird fucking libertarian little kid in my school, like, you can't bring hunting knives or BB guns to school. And I was like, what about a pencil? I bet I could kill someone with a pencil if I wanted to. That's a weapon. And it's like, I was just being a little shit, but they've decided to take that unironically and run with it. And they're like, we've confiscated 20 incredibly dangerous Bic and Ticonderoga number twos from the insurgents.
Yeah. Rest assured, none of these insurgents are going to be doing any standardized tests on our watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very crazy. And I mean, I don't know. On one hand, it's absurd, but like at the same time, there was recently an article that not very many people I saw talking about it, from something called theconversation.com. Mm-hmm. By Tempitope Orala from the University of Alberta, called "The United States is at Risk of an Armed Anti-Police Insurgency." and the answer is yes. And I wonder whose fault that is. But the article is, you know, not very long, actually. It's sort of just like this weird sort of caution, I guess, is the tone it's taking, which is like, well, okay, so black people have been killed at the hands of police officers, really egregious. So what's going to start happening is they're going to have like a not a a not defined organizational structure, looking like the Mexico Zapatista movement. It's weird because it almost feels like it's winking to the reader or whatever. Like, wouldn't it be scary if something like this happened? You could organize it this way.
Yeah, hey, like, if you mixed elements of revolutionary Marxism and insurrectionary anarchism, you might be able to get a foothold and establish some kind of decentralized rhizomatic insurrectionary cell structure. Just an idea. Just spitballing here.
I'm just saying that would be real scary if that happened. It would might fracture the foundation of our quote unquote democracy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's a very weirdly, because it's like, if you imagine this headline, like, because I saw on the BBL Mids posting group that this article was posted, and some people were saying like things conservatives say that would be awesome if true.
Right.
Because you could definitely imagine like the New York Times or the Washington Post like op-ed version of this, where they're like, this could happen, so we have to kill everyone. Yeah. Like, it would definitely be like scaremongering. But this guy is a sociologist, from what I understand, and he's basically just saying like, I've studied how this happens in other countries, and every factor that leads to, you know, an armed insurgent uprising is at play in the United States. There's people who are like oppressed and have felonies that follow them their entire lives. There is, you know, a police force that is basically immune to any kind of like normal political action. Like, you can't vote for anything that would change how they act. And people are reaching a point where they feel like they have nothing to lose. And, you know, when you combine all those factors, and when you have, you know, I think one of the last things he mentions also is that like, when you reach a point where even nonviolent protest is criminalized and is attacked, it's basically like the cops are daring people to do this. Because if people gather with signs and then they're attacked and shot at and pepper sprayed and the signs are stolen, and it's like, why don't we just gather and shoot at the cops instead?
Yeah, it's like, right. I mean, I've said on a couple bonuses, it's just like I literally just said this a couple bonuses ago. Mm-hmm. Like, the only thing. The cops are creating a situation where the only logical move is to shoot first.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Like,
and it's like a situation where a lot of people, I think, would support that. Cause he's talking about like, the weathermen in the US in the 70s and 80s, like setting off bombs and stuff.
Right.
And that, like, probably, you know, it's, you can go to Home Depot and buy stuff to make a bomb.
Well, and he's talking about like the Zapatista movement, which like engaged in prolonged proletarian warfare across the mountains of southern Mexico. And he talks about the movement for the emancipation of the Niger Delta, which was literally car bombings. So it's like, you know, and those are tactics that work against police. Like, if squaring off against them in the street, you could possibly get that to work, but like, you can just blow up a police station. I'm not telling you to, but you definitely can. Like,
you could.
Yeah, yeah.
You really, and that's the could. Thing. I feel like there's some sort of like, I mean, I feel like propaganda has so sort of poisoned the minds of would-be revolutionaries and people who would fight back against the police, because it's like, I feel like there's this sense that America, it can't happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's this sense that like, well, we're
people
not.
People think it feels too one-sided. They're like, well, the army and the cops are too powerful. You can never do anything.
I think a big reason for that is like, no one knows about the IRA. Like, there's like, I guess like imperial countries that this has happened in that, like, you know, sometimes you get, if you oppress a class so deeply and so intensely, they're just going to start shooting back.
Well, and like, also the idea that it could never happen here because we're in the core of the empire is just fucking ridiculous in the first place. Like, as if the Bolsheviks didn't overthrow an empire, as if the Chinese didn't overthrow an empire to establish their communism, as if like dozens of small countries like Cuba, Vietnam, and Burkina Faso didn't like fight off their imperial oppressors.
They're colonists.
Yeah, they're colonizers to establish their own independence. Like,
that's how it works.
It absolutely could happen here, especially during like a period of economic decline, which I don't know if you've noticed, but America has been in for some time now.
Right. And I think anybody who takes a reasonable look at America knows that it's about to break up. Like, the states, you know, the sort of United States, as it were, will not last another 50 years.
Yeah, well, it's like they keep...
Impossible.
The capitalism has become so detached from so many of the forces that formed it in the United States that it either, like, the ruling class's strategy has basically been to jerk it around with a bunch of, like, different permutations of fascist ideas on how to get things back on track. And they've been able to do that a bunch of times in the past and kind of restore capitalist equilibrium. But like, we called it late capitalism for a reason. Like, it's growing more and more unstable. And every like tactic that they use, like bailing out the fucking banks or like weird like stimulus programs during the pandemic that don't even come close to working. And like, all of these ideas are getting more and more desperate and less effective and causing more and more side effects. It's like there will eventually be a tipping point. That's just inevitable. Mm-hmm. Next 5 years, next 10 years, I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, I feel like that's something I think about where it's like, if you go back in time, it's like you have people who are billionaires because of like access to resources like oil or steel or whatever. And then it's like, currently, I think technically Elon Musk is the richest person in the world. And that's mostly because of fucking like stock market manipulation. It's like Tesla's stock value is insanely inflated. And I think there's also like rumors that Elon Musk owns tons of Dogecoin. I mean, he clearly owns a lot because he's constantly tweeting about sending it to the moon just to like pump the prices up.
Right.
So it's like when you reach a point where the biggest elites aren't even exactly like trying to exploit natural resources, like Elon Musk definitely is. He wants to like get lithium out of Bolivia, but it's like just as much the richest people are like exploiting the absurdities of a financial system.
Yeah.
And when like the whole underpinning of your economy is just like people playing more and more insane like games of building houses of cards, it's like the collapse is becoming more and more inevitable.
Right. And I think I've been sort of gleaning towards using Michael S. Judge's language around sort of the rise to the empire of America being, you know, the Nazis lost the Second World War and won the Third World War. And we are now living in the Fourth Reich. And I think the thing about that is that a lot of people will say like, oh, you think like America is run by a bunch of men in smoky back rooms, you know, that shadowy back rooms. But I think the thing that,
if only,
I think the thing about it that's worse for America now is that if you go into those rooms now, they're just filled with smoke and ghosts. Mm-hmm. Like it's no one is behind the curtain anymore. Like all of those people who had like the absolute like power and drive to create the empire are dead, and now it's just a bunch of stupid spoiled children just looting the pockets of whatever they created. Mm-hmm. And it's all gonna go to hell. Like,
well, it's a machine running on its own. Like, they kept building it up. The only way to keep getting things out of the machine was to keep putting pieces in and making it run in more and more esoteric ways, and like, you know, direct more and more capital towards yourself. And whenever you are a person with a node of capital in significant capital in capitalism, you just let it accrue. You just let it aggregate more capital, and you just try and steer that as closely as you can. And it's like, there's a breaking point there. You can only squeeze so much blood from a stone, you know, before the whole thing just fucking crumbles. It's a machine. At this point, there is nobody at the helm. Capital is its own thing that has its own plan. It's a process that just does what it does. And people like Elon Musk are just the people who happen to be benefiting the most from it right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So I think places like the coastal cities, like Minnesota, Michigan, you know, Detroit, New York, LA, like what we're going to start seeing is like, I can't imagine people are going to not start bringing guns to these things because the people are going to start getting killed.
Yeah.
And they're not going to stop happening. I think that's sort of like the sort of liberal assumption that if like the National Guard comes in and starts pointing ARs in your face, like people are just going to stop protesting, which is not going to happen.
Right. Well, I mean,
people are just going to come back with guns.
I think the ruling class knows that if they just go like early 20th century on this and they send in the National Guard and they fire live rounds and like massacre a bunch of protesters, that that will be it. That like there's no room for that. If that happens, this country is going to burn the fuck down, and the ruling class isn't going to like the fucking results.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, in every revolution, there's a lot of people who are mowed down by fucking machine guns. You know, it's like you're not going to get out of the U.S. empire with everyone alive. But it's like they're shooting people already. They're shooting people for driving their cars. So what are people supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, they just keep trying to decentralize the violence and hide it behind more and more like layers of judicial obfuscation and stuff. But people are like too wise to that shit now. And there's too many unemployed journalists who are like, fuck it, I'm not getting a paycheck. I'll just report on what's actually happening on my fucking Twitter feed. And like,
and I think
it sucks to say, but like, it sometimes it is just like disillusioned people who are like, what did I even get into journalism for? What did I even get into activism for? Who just like break and are like, fuck it, I'm just gonna fucking fight power to the fucking, you know, end of my life, to the end of my abilities.
And I think, you know, I think one other thing about this concept or prospect that there might be some sort of like armed insurrection specifically against the police, but you know, you can't have a anti-police insurrection and then just stop once all the police are dead. Like, no, that's just like not, it's not going to work like that.
It's not even a sunk cost fallacy. At that point, you just have so much momentum. It's like, why don't we knock down another horrible institution while we're out here?
Well, it's like, well, why were the police? Yeah, exactly. Why were the police there in the first place? And then you end up having to, you know, have some sort of foundational ideology. But the one thing I think about a lot is people might respond to this and say like, well, where are they? Like, who's doing this? Who would possibly do this? And I think the thing is that we're not going to know. And I think that's a very good thing, because if anybody is organizing and arming themselves against the police, I don't want to be able to tell you their names. Like, or they shouldn't be telling you their real names yet. Like, you know, we're not talking about like a leader who's going to, you know, everything is susceptible to infiltration and
And it's just like, I'm running a fucking armed insurrectionary cell that is getting ready for a serious, like violent confrontation with the state. And my like priority is to delegate one of my group members to go tell some podcasters what's going on. Like,
I don't know. It's like,
that's the stupidest possible thing you could do.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably people who are going to like be doing this before too long who don't like, if someone is going to do this, I don't think they even know it yet in a lot of cases, like, because I think I've heard a lot of people talk about like the idea of a communist movement in the US, and they're like, if it ever happens, then most of the people involved do not call themselves communists or socialists right now at all. They're just, you know, they're the proletariat. They understand on a deep level that they're exploited, but like they don't have all of this language around it. They just understand the problem.
Well, and I mean, there's this thought, I think, among a lot of people who are more theory brained about like Marxism or even anarchism, where the idea is just like, we're not ready. We're not ready. We have to take the time to educate everybody. We have to take the time to make sure everybody's on the same page. And it's like, you are not going to get 355 million Americans to all back the same ideology. Like, what you could do is unite them against clear and obvious enemies like the police, or, you know, like fucking Congress in general, or like fucking, you know, elected officials in this country.
This is why I get so upset with people online. It's like, there's going to be like reactionary elements or streaks in whatever movement there are, especially if you've got a bunch of
opportunism, adventurism, all of the same shit that you see in any fucking revolution.
CIA infiltration, you know, some sort of like misogyny in certain leaders or whatever. Like,
this is the thing that I think a lot of people get wrong, is they go into this and they're like, okay, theoretically revolution comes relatively soon. They start shitting themselves. They're like, there's going to be opportunism, there's going to be adventurism and careerism, there's going to be all of this shit, there's going to be infiltrators. And it's like, yeah, dude, that comes with the territory. Like, you should have taken that shit for granted when you when you thought of the idea of a revolution. Like, revolutions are not like nice, neat things where like our team wears the red shirts and their team wears the green shirt. Like, that's not how it fucking works.
If you just made everyone read Lenin enough, there wouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like,
like tugging on someone's shirt as they're going to bomb a police station and being like, hey, you want to read some Lenin on the way? If you play this audiobook at 10 times speed, I think you can absorb it all pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, there's always going to be stuff where, and this is what really frustrated me about like the arguments around Chaz, which was like, Chaz, like, okay. First of all, the concept of it was a little weird, but you know, to say like, it was a bad idea to like try to defend a police station as a fucking like, and take down one of their places because some people were a little drunk with power or something. Like, what do you mean? Like, of course they are going to be. Like,
well, and also it's just like, what do you think that thing was? Right? Like, what are these people who are like really sore about Chaz not being the exact right thing had their hopes much more pinned on Chaz than people who were just like, oh yeah, this seems cool. This might be productive in changing how people think about this in the long term. Like, if you're really that upset that like Chaz wasn't the exact right thing that it needed to be to like become a permanent autonomous region or whatever you thought was going to happen, then you were clearly more invested in this than the people that you're trying to deride for being too invested in it. Like, it's a nonsensical thing. And I'm not saying that like that automatically makes you a fucking reactionary or anything. It just means that like you're bumping up against one of the more difficult contradictions of organizing under this incredibly oppressive system, which is that we're going to have to fail over and over again before we succeed. Like, that's just how it
there's
works.
There's going to be like strains of Hotepism, and like, you're going to be like, oh, that guy said something kind of anti-Semitic or something, but it's like, well, he's firing against the cops, so I don't care.
Or like this 65-year-old trot wandered into our, you know, autonomous zone and tried to start telling us that we needed to be more international with our socialism. It's like, who cares? Just like tell him to sit down, like shove a piece of food in his mouth. Like, who gives a shit? Like, it's not, everybody's getting so ahead of themselves. That's the thing. You get like a whiff that you might be able to make a change, and suddenly it's tendency time. It's like, is that productive at all?
Yeah. Get any sort of power first, and then we'll talk about whether it's problematic to, like, you know, say the blacks are the real Israelites.
Yeah,
or
my Food Not Bombs chapter is feuding with the other local Food Not Bombs chapter because we have different takes on Kronstadt. Like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. And so
it splintered off. Now there's a second one that's food and bombs. Yeah. They want to bomb the police station.
Yeah, I think there needs to be food and
food
bombs.
And bombs should be a food great organization. Yeah. Yeah.
Feed the homeless and give them fucking bombs.
Yeah, this is basically like Bernie and Bust, but that was electoralism, and this is direct action.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, we have to move past the point of being afraid of not doing fighting the police the wrong way, or like without like a perfect you know, social liberalism or whatever.
The only wrong way to fight the police is by yourself. Don't do that. You know,
correct.
That's true. Yeah
fantastic.
That what was the guy's name, the anarchist who like tried to shoot at like an ice house or whatever?
Yeah,
ice station.
Honestly though, the more I think about that, I've been thinking about that a lot, because you know, as like, we're constantly visited by the looming threat of like your lungs imploding, death or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been thinking a lot about death, and it's like, if you don't like use, like, even if you're like, well, I tried my whole life to like get an organization together. You find out you have cancer. Like, I absolutely understand just ramming your car into an ICE agency and blowing it up.
Was he like dying of cancer?
I don't know. I'm just saying, we don't know anything about him, but it's like, look, man, if you're going to die anyway, more power to you.
Yeah.
I don't care. Do whatever you want. But yes, the important part is, if you actually want to do something, organize. But let's talk about doing something the absolute wrong way. Sean McElwee, who you might know as the guy who in 2016 had his display name as "We're going to abolish ICE."
Mm-hmm. And he acted like he invented the slogan "Abolish ICE."
Right.
And then he kept credit for it.
And he kept changing it to lesser. It's almost like a parody.
It was basically like, you know how recently AOC was like, concentration camps, well, they're overflow facilities now that Biden is president. Like, I feel like this guy was in case Bernie doesn't win, it's reform ICE.
Right. No, yeah. he kept,
I mean,
changing
his Twitter bio
name.
Literally says co-founder and executive director for Data Progress Overton Window Mover.
Oh,
polling for take back
incredible.
The court and the appeal board at secure elections. So it's like, this guy has like ultimate progressive wonk brain. Like, I can fix it from within the system. I can fix the country without upsetting my dad. Like, that's
yes, exactly. He his organization, which I am not sure it is anybody but him, because it just says led by Sean McElwee.
It
doesn't follow anybody.
It says co-founder, so there must be another founder in there somewhere.
Yeah. He's around somewhere.
But it appears to be a Twitter account that does polling. Mm-hmm. I guess there is a website, but whatever.
Anyone can make
I wanted to talk about this because Data for Progress tweeted, poll, a significant bipartisan majority of national voters support taking on comprehensive immigration reform and reject any delay due to the situation at the border. So the question there, and then they tweeted this screenshot that the question says, which statement comes closer to your view, even if neither is exactly right? While the situation at the U.S.-Mexican border is a crisis, the focus should be on an actual fix for the long broken immigration system. Or the situation at the U.S.-Mexican border is a crisis, and that means that now just isn't the time to pursue comprehensive immigration reform. Like, what the fuck are you talking
what
about?
What does any of that mean?
I ain't reading all that. I'm happy for you, though, or sorry that happened.
Tell me, Sean, which of the following is more true? You shit in your pants because you really had to go to the bathroom and you couldn't hold it in that day, or you shit in your pants because you like the feeling and there was a bathroom nearby, but you wanted to shit in your pants. You have to pick one. You can't say neither of these applies to how I feel in any way. You can say I don't know.
The options say the same thing. It's literally like, should we acknowledge that we're directly kicking this issue down the road, or should we say that we're kicking it down the road because we want to come up with an actual solution, which is not proposed. There's like no concrete proposal to do anything built into this question. It is the most like anodyne, like sterile political polling you could ever ask for.
And I think I just wanted to mention it because it feels like a parody, you know, like it feels like a parody of this sort of like, I'm helping. I'm Ralph Wiggin and I'm fucking like just doing the job of the Democrats, pushing them left by doing polls that are this insane that it's like, I don't know if it's not a crisis. Like what it is a plan to concentrate on wanted people and murder them in a concentration camp. I mean, I guess the Holocaust was a crisis, but it was also just a fucking plan. Like that's what it's supposed to do.
Right.
I don't like calling it a crisis so vague. You could basically mean like the influx of brown people into America is a crisis. So I don't think that's a crisis.
No.
Is the fact that people are being raped and killed daily in concentration camps a crisis? I guess.
Look, it's the situation, okay? The whole situation, just like gesticulating as wildly as possible. The whole thing. All of that is a crisis, right? It's gotten out of hand.
We can all agree,
dog
right?
Sitting in a burning room, right? Okay, down there at the border.
Yeah, we all know about the dog and sitting in the burning room. And this is the thing about it is it's like this is what happens to your brain if you start at abolish ICE, and then are like, well, how can I get power for myself within the structure that we have set up, which is a capitalist bourgeoisie dictatorship. And he wants power. He doesn't want to abolish ICE. He has completely abandoned that idea. If you're saying we need real solutions for our U.S.-Mexico border crisis, fuck off.
Well, speaking of the crisis, speaking of the whole situation, I have some more disappointing news from our big dry boy in chief, Mr. Blue Cheeto, Mr. Cool Ranch Dorito himself, President Joseph Robinette Biden. We have an article from Bloomberg that just like sucks his dick the whole time. So I'm not going to read you a bunch of quotes like, Joe Biden's balancing act on the politically fraught issue of immigration moves to the U.S. Supreme Court in a case that finds the new administration at odds with Democratic lawmakers and progressive allies. I'm not going to read you that garbage, but I am going to summarize for you basically what's going on, which is that there is a program in the United States called the Temporary Protected Status Program, which allows people who have had to enter the country illegally for one reason or another, whether it's a refugee based on it's mostly refugees. refugees, but whether it's like a refugee based on the climate or a war that we started or some kind of natural disaster is kind of a mixed bag. It's over half of the people who are covered by the TPS program are from El Salvador, accounting for more than 250,000 out of the more than 400,000 people from about a dozen countries who are covered by this. And what's happening relevant to this temporary protected status program is that Joe Biden is urging the Supreme Court to rule that we should not accept green card applications from people who are already covered by TPS, even though getting a proper green card would represent a significant increase in quality of life for those immigrants in the United States.
Mm.
And Bloomberg is like shocked that Joe Biden is going against what seems like conventional Democrat wisdom that we should just grant them their green cards. But of course,
yeah, you'd think.
They're framing this as like some kind of rift in the Democratic Party, when really it's quite obvious that like the Democrats, by and large, don't want this to happen. Or if there are some wide-eyed progressive policymakers like the Squad or whatever who would strongly back allowing these people to get, you know, regular permanent residency permits, then they're basically saying, hey, fuck you, that's not on the table.
Right. Of course.
You know, President Dryboy said so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just seems like, you know, whatever the case, they want to means test it. Like, even if it's something where it's like reached a level of public consciousness where the Democrats are like, well, we have to admit that refugees should be allowed to come into the country, but it can't be too easy and there can't be too many of them, because right, there's an arbitrary limit we've placed on only 1,000 people can get a green card, or only 20 people can get a green card, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Right. And which is never explained why. Like, there's
it's
never
a pretty
like
big country. It's one of the biggest.
It's a huge country. We only have 300 million. There's massive amounts of empty space and resources. We're the richest country in the history of the world. It's never clear why we can't have. And it's like, you know, we have to remember that like open borders, you know, under capitalism would just be a boon for, you know, capitalism, you know, low wage workers, unless you give them like all the rights, you know, and right, like mm-hmm, immediate citizenship. So it's like, what is even their excuse? Because even by capitalist logic,
they're scared that these immigrants are going to show up in our country and start taking advantage of the $50 per interview at McDonald's deal.
Yeah.
And they're going to start taking all of the jobs on Uber, yeah, Eats and Amazon Mechanical Turk that we don't want, you know? And that's a scary, scary thing. And it does suck, because it's like you said, like, even if we do give these people regular permanent residency, even if we do like open our borders up and start allowing in whoever, it still doesn't fix the problem. It just fixes, right, like one facet of the problem that is still hemmed in by so many other things.
It's just so interesting, this whole, like, because it's a moral panic, right? More than a economic panic, really. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really know who it's serving to be like, we don't want these people. I mean, I guess at some level, like, it costs the government money to like have a,
it's just an elections thing. Basically, I think it's just like a lot of the country is really racist, and the parties rely more on their figures of major power, but they can't be held up without all of the fucking state legislators and, like, you know, Congress people in that huge ass House of Representatives and everything. And they know that if they start getting soft on immigration or whatever, like Joe Racist from the middle of nowhere, yeah, or like a fucking major city, let's be real, racism lives everywhere in the United States, we'll just not vote for them anymore. And they're scared, right, of that. So
yeah, it's just a bizarre thing, because it's like it really feels to be kind of like, I guess it feels more like the sort of like Nazi Volkishness of like, there's no real economic reason. Like, businesses under capitalism would benefit from more people, you know, more poor people,
yeah,
that they can exploit easily. It just seems like it's absolutely just like, no, because they're brown.
Well, fucking businesses under capitalism would benefit from raising wages for workers across the board. And yet they don't do it, because they don't want to live in a good economy. They want to live in an economy that gives them the power of exclusion, because to them, absolutely, that means more than fucking anything. Like, think about what makes, what are signifiers of wealth? Things that other people can't have. Like, the concept of wealth mm-hmm. is exclusive by its very definition. And so the wealthy prioritize that.
Absolutely. So it's just disgusting and awful. And of course, you know, who could have seen that Biden might do exactly what Trump would have done?
no one ever said that was going to happen.
No one said that. We were so taken aback by it.
Yeah. Don't listen to our old episodes. They're noise sets. They're
yeah. They're all
very
like
experimental.
Collabs with Merzbow and Shushu.
The body.
anyway, last thing I just wanted to mention is that Derek Chauvin's trial is underway. The closing arguments are happening as we speak. This is why we haven't talked about it, because we don't know what's happening, even though this will come out Wednesday. We're recording it as the closing arguments are happening, so we won't know the verdict. And, you know, it's weird because we have no idea, like, if they convict him and put him in jail, like, will there not be riots? Will there not be protests?
Like, who knows? I mean, they're trying to stretch this thing out as long as they can. They want this trial to go on forever because the trial going on is better than any trial result. Mm-hmm. To the ruling class. Like, the most recent post on CNN is from 1 minute ago. Update: defense has resumed its closing arguments. The defense attorney Eric Nelson has been speaking to jurors for more than 2 hours. This guy has been doing closing arguments for 2 Game of Thrones episodes.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, they're really scared because, you know, they're damned if they do, because the police are going to be fucking losing their minds if they're one of their guys, you know, just for doing the very basic action of kneeling on someone's neck until they die, the normal thing they're trained to do. Then they go to jail for that. That seems crazy. So they're damned if they do that. They're going to have benevolent associations everywhere fucking yelling at them, threatening their children's lives. Remember, that's how they treat police. The police treat politicians that they don't think are on their side. Like, they've literally threatened de Blasio's children's life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, we're going to kill your daughter, because he wasn't at first friendly to the police, and now he sucks their dick and they still don't care because they know he's just doing, because he's slimy,
because the police are a fucking gang. They're just they're 100%. Like a really bad, like, they're not even a cool gang. They're a really shitty gang who just like
the worst gang.
Do TV mafia shit and like aren't even fucking smart. Like, they suck. Every other gang is better than the police.
They are literally the Klan with state backing.
True.
Yeah.
And so
not quite as many like stuff based around being a wizard, but otherwise the same.
Have you seen some of those fucking challenge coins?
Yeah.
I guess that's true. Yeah. They're like, these are my magic beans and this is my magic talisman. I guess. Yeah. What, like, what is putting a fucking like police benevolent sticker on your car other than like casting a spell of protection?
Yeah. They and made so the Klan into the police. What the fuck?
So they do that, or they convict him. Or they don't convict him, and they start a fucking armed insurrection against the police. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. But either way, it's going to be very fun for everybody, I'm sure. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. This has been Beep Beep Lettuce. As we said, Todd is away right now. He is flying to a magic place in the sky. We wish him well.
We sent Todd to sell the cow at the market and see how much he can get for it.
We had to get rid of those magic beans that we had.
I didn't want them.
Anyway, so this has been Beep Beep Lettuce. Thanks so much for listening. Please follow us at WeedPod on Twitter. That one is still not suspended, miraculously.
Amazing.
But follow all of our personal accounts from there. Also, go to patreon.com/bbblettuce. You can sign up for a single bonus episode each week, weekly bonus episodes where we talk about even spicier shit. You will get access to the Discord where we hang out and have fun. And also, if you want to listen to my other podcast, I have another one called Generation Lost, a movie podcast with Jeremy Hammond. You can listen to John's other podcast, Work Stoppage, about labor rights and strikes and stuff like that. You can watch me and Chris's show on Means TV, twitch.tv/lefttrigger_. And you can hang out with us in Discord. Beep Beep Lettuce, mids posting. We'll see you there.
Keep beeping.
Bye. This happens to be the only color.
Shaw. Huh. The Root Fire Discotheque. Black flow from the southwest of Illa N, D, or N. It's second nature, I defend them. Rebel routine, I scheme and plot. Ain't no use in stepping if we don't step hot. Let them movements be made, there's goals to be getting. No second for no love in the fetting. Why there's all these ugly bands on my TV screen? I wrap my head with photo, why? So I don't catch them beans. The sounder of a downer, don't fray for step solo. We far flung frontier, Captain Kirk, the sun, Trekker. Full time I climb, my chip deep and taut as I sow seeds of thought. The fruits of the roots, a vision of splendid, splendidness. Now I be proud to be spitting in the face of the beast. With each and every move I make, every shite I break. You might watch me, but I watch you too. Ain't a thing you can do to stop me. Boom, what this? What that? What's these? In times we act, how we juggle things. Papa, man, the fool yourself. What that? What's these? In times we act, how we juggle things. Proper man, the phone you'll stand. When I swing, I'm far-fetched like Hicks from Hicksville. Hot steps got me tricking from Peckham to Box Hill. Still I stand firm though the strife come thick. Motion slick, hip to every rank, poly trick. So I spread love like Lennon and Yoko Ono. Kick rhyme slow-mo for a whole 10 tune. Don't go calling me coon, you'll catch a boot to your jaw. We pull back, big that, gang sweep no blood I heard. Lungs in my peoples and burst their backs. Work hard for eons and pay tax. And they have not seen Jack in return. How that shit burn, it could well make a guy lose sense and rationale. On two kamikazes on street. It's eyeball for eyeball, teeth for teeth. While we spinning this ball of confusion, I sight no solution. Sex bitches get more frowsy. Chemical rain got me drunk and the drowsy. Rowdy, I got no choice but to be a living example of a Roots 5 Luke type soldier. Bowling through like there ain't no tomorrow. Bathe them terrains of pain and deep sorrow, but still keep sliding on. I try to make sense of the madness, but it seems like I'm wasting my time. It's best I just go get me mine, find some inner peace, climb to higher heights, embrace the light. Oh, what this? What that? What's these? In towns we earn, how we juggle things proper, man. The phone you'll stand. Oh, what this? What that? What's these? In towns we earn, how we living dead noose, the bane of life in the West. But who's down for civil unrest? In times like these, comrades, it's hard to find. The beast keeps the masses toeing the line. With them sneaky tactics, they'll keep them boys running so they can have a market for their guns and ammunition. Keep the third world in a stagnant position. Begging for money, treat aid from IMF. We don't seem too keen to write off the third world debt, cause they profit from holding it down. Soon there be no dollars, no yens, no pounds. This madness, microchips and high-tech war. And all because the beast wants to gain control of each and every mind, body, spirit, and soul. Boom, what this? What that? What's these? In times we act, how we juggle things. Pop off, man, the phone don't stand. Boom, what this? What that? What's these? In times we act, how we juggle things. Pop off, man, the phone don't stand. Boom, what this? What that? What's these? In times we act, how we juggle things, pop up, man, the phone don't stand.
We keep it juggling. And that's how it is. Inside the psyche of us. Jack on Muffin. Thank you.